You're listening to the audio program Host and Guest, hosted by me, Rick Katchke. Now here's myself, Rick Katchke. Yes, welcome to this edition of Host and Guest. This is part two of my interview with Tom Fuchs, delayed, but here. Here's my chat. All right, we're...
It takes two to make a thing go right.
We're back with Tom Fuchs for part two of our two-parter. Where we're talking about the films of 2011, some of Tom's picks and clicks.
And a click, you can't tell because this is a podcast, but there's a button here that says, fuck that movie, and I click it
every time. Yeah, but it's a silent click, though. So let's kick it off with a non-click. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Let's click it off with Click, starring Adam Sandler with a clicky remote that sends him through time.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
This, to me, is right there with Attack the Block. And then another movie, which I didn't write on here, but we'll talk about. We'll hit it. I'll find a way of sagging into it. They, like, kind of vie for my favorite movie of the year. This is from the director of Let the Right One In, the Swedish vampire movie.
That inspired Let Me In.
Directed by the guy who did Cloverfield, which can bring us just fuck Super 8. If we can slip that back in here in any way, shape, or form, fuck that movie. But Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, it's just like just a collection of like all of the best actors alive doing really good acting. And Gary Oldman is usually screaming, or Commissioner Gordon. Those are like his two acting styles. Like, he's either screaming at you and just devouring scenery, or he's just kind of bland on purpose. But in this movie, like, it's so subtle. Like, it's all like, he's setting everything into play to kind of smoke the mole out of this group. Like, and it's all, like, you can see him putting everything in motion, and you can see, like, the gears turning and the way, like, he looks at people and reacts to stuff. But it's not like he doesn't, like, flip a table. He's like, fuck you! Fuck you, Taylor! You're the spy! And the soldier! And the tinker! I'm trying to find a tinker. What is a tinker anyways? God damn it. But like,
I gotta go to my tailor.
That was almost like a Harvey Fierstein in Independence Day.
I gotta go to my tinker.
Jeff Goldblum's like, oh, you gotta get out of town, Harvey Fierstein. Aliens are coming. I cracked the code. And he's like,
oh, I gotta call my tailor and my soldier. What's my spy gonna think of this?
The movie is phenomenally directed. It's a total slow burn. I think some people argue that it's convoluted, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing that you have to watch a movie twice. I don't, like, we live in an era where it's like kind of like, fuck it, I watched it once, I can now speak with authority.
Well, I mean, in many respects, you directed a film that requires multiple viewings entitled Furiosi. So this would appeal to your sensibilities.
Yeah, I think anyone who's seen it would describe it as a horrible piece of shit.
The first time.
The second time, they would say there's some redeemable qualities. The third time, they'd be back on the it's a horrible piece of shit bus. And the fourth time, they're like, I don't really care to watch this ever again after this fourth time.
Why do I keep watching this?
What is happening that I continually find this DVD, this photoshopped DVD with Rick Katchke's face over Jimmy Fallon's face?
From the Scheme.
Tinker Tailor. All the actors are good. And when I was talking about a movie with a perfect ending, I think the slow burn wouldn't necessarily work. So, like, Super 8 is a slow burn and it leads to nothing. Well, this is a slow burn that culminates just in, like, just like a masterful montage set to Enrique Iglesias. No, Julio Iglesias.
It's set to Hero.
It's set to Hero. I could be your hero, baby. I could be your tailor, baby. I could alter all your pants. Yeah, let's just... go, take it from here. Weird Al this. It's Weird Al. People have been clamping for a mashup of the plot of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy with Enrique Iglesias' hero. Julio Iglesias does a French version of Beyond the Sea at the end of it. It's a very upbeat song for a movie that's been sort of not upbeat. But it's a perfect crescendo, and it just ends when it should end. It doesn't keep going a la Scream 4.
Now, let's go to something that you have to deal with every day. That would be the skin I live in. I'm talking about my skin.
I was going to say Herpes Complex B.
The movie.
A documentary by David Guggenheim. I don't know that that's a real documentarian. I know there's a Guggenheim, though.
I thought, isn't David Guggenheim the one who did Inconvenient Truth? And
the Waiting for
Waiting Superman. For Superman, yeah.
I think he just did a documentary about Obama's first 3 years, too.
So the film The Skin I Live In
is by Pedro Almodovar, who right up there with Edgar Wright and Wong Kar-wai are my favorite living directors. So I'm kind of predisposed to loving his movies. But this is the first time he's worked with Antonio Banderas in decades. He discovered Antonio Banderas, kind of brought him into movies with his roles in some pretty risque, NC-17 stuff that he made early on.
Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down.
And then Antonio Banderas repaid him by going to Hollywood and then never working with him again. but he did Desperado and all that stuff, and at that point kind of became, a Hollywood fixture. And they kind of moved out of each other's orbit. And this is the first time they've worked together since. And Banderas is phenomenal in this movie. He's really, really good. But it's the most, horror, almost sci-fi horror movie that Almodovar has ever made. He mostly works in melodrama. So if you kind of don't like that kind of style of movie making, which I know is not everyone's cup of tea, this might not work for you. But, it's more cool and detached than his other movies have been, kind of by virtue of that he's working with, this... Antonio Banderas is a surgeon, a world-class surgeon in the movie, so it kind of has that ascetic, not aesthetic, but ascetic lifestyle, so everything is kind of, very clean and orderly and neat, and then, everything is framed that way, too, in the movie to kind of reflect that. And some people found it cold and distancing, but, the story to me is very provocative and interesting. And his camera work is so brilliant and good. And the performances are amazing. I don't know her. It's Elena Anaya? Or Alaya? Is the name of the actress. I'm sorry. I know she's going to be listening to this. So I'm super sorry that I messed up your name.
She's actually one of the biggest fans of this show. She's written me an email after every episode.
She sends you a picture of her eating a hoagie wearing Zubaz pants.
Postandguest@gmail.com. She knows it by heart. She emails me after every show. She emailed me after the show we just did.
Part one.
Yes.
She's like, I'm kind of pissed off you didn't talk about The Skin I Live In.
I said, don't worry, you. I'm going to email you.
I'm going to email you?
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, this bit was good. It went good places. We've exhausted it. Like the Earth's oil, we have taken all of it and left nothing. She's better than Banderas even in the movie. She's kind of the emotional center of the movie, and she delivers just an amazing performance, which is made more amazing as the movie does its twists and turns, and you realize kind of what she's been doing throughout. So I know I said Tinker Tailor, Attack the Block, and this is a third one, and then there's a fourth. They would be my top four of the year. Everything else is kind of good. Or in the case of The Artist, I kind of feel bad because I didn't dislike The Artist.
You're portraying yourself as a man who hated it.
I know, and that's kind of an unfair, because I enjoy the dog doing tricks. I enjoy the scene where he's trying to cheer up his bitch of a wife who was never given any character development. It's so hard for me, everything I say that's trying to be a compliment comes back to shitting on it. And I like the movie, and I like some of the shots. I like the scene where she's hugging herself in his coat. I think he gets some striking images. And I think Jean Dujardin is a very... Could you do it? I don't know if I nailed
Jean
it.
Jean Dujardin.
Much better. I think he's incredibly charismatic, and I've always liked him as an actor, so I'm happy to see him get, like, a vehicle for just how charismatic he is.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't, like, people will watch because it's not subtitled. So, when you get into the edit bay, take that chunk right there, just throw it in the front half of part one of the podcast.
I like that you picture me in an editing bay.
Well, you usually go down.
Sitting at the editing bay. Making those lines go away.
We really should just, there should be a whole music based on the two-part 2011 movie recap podcast where we do hilarious,
Crystal can sing it.
Hilarious Weird Al, like, pastiches of songs that did not come out in 2011, did not come out in that decade or the previous decade, but that were tying into movies and events from this podcast. I think that would be a hit. Look for that on iTunes, guys. We'll lay that down.
Anything else you wanted to say about The Skin I Live In?
It's really good. And I think you'll like it if you like movies. And it ends at a good time, too. I wouldn't say it's as perfect of an ending as Attack the Block and Tinker Tailor, but it knows to end. A lot of movies don't know when to end these days.
Let's talk about The Interrupters. I was trying to interrupt you, and
we'll try it again.
Okay.
A lot of movies don't know.
Hey, Tom, let's talk about The Interrupters.
Now, Rick, what I was trying to say is that we should talk about the movie The Interrupters.
Oh, well, we were going there anyways.
But then you interrupted me.
Yeesh.
I gotta call my tinker. The Interrupters, I was certain would both be nominated and then win Best Documentary Oscar. It's the new documentary from the guy who made Hoop Dreams, Steve James. It follows, like, violence interrupters in the Chicago inner city. They're, like, they've been formerly involved in, like, gang violence. And what they do is they try and interrupt violence as it's happening, try and stop them from occurring, or if they hear that violence is going to happen, if they hear, like, groups are, there's, like, some, like, fissures, what a douchey phrase to use in that context. Between rival gangs, they'll try and get in the middle of it and get them to, like, mediate their problems. And it's a phenomenal documentary that, like, you feel both hopeless and hopeful at the same time, that these people can, you know, have such perseverance to keep at this when so many bad things happen. And they do have positive results in the areas that they're working, and they do get people to look at their situations differently and realize that if you keep just escalating violence and responding to violence with violence, it will never end. It will continue to be violent. There's never a point at which where everyone's like, well, I feel like we've killed enough of each other. Let's call it a day. Let's go catch the artist. I've heard good things.
But, oh, I didn't. I was listening to Hosts and Guests. There's been many gang wars based on things that have been said on this show.
So it was a really good documentary, and I felt sad that it didn't get the proper attention. Hoop Dreams didn't get nominated either, though.
Right.
So he just is always, not even a bridesmaid, he's always a wedding DJ. Never the bride. Or a bridesmaid. He's always just playing fucking electric slide outside of the Kodak Theater.
So, speaking of violence, let's talk about a film featuring violence, and that would be 13 Assassins.
13 Assassins, and I didn't know when we were going through this if this came out this year. I think it did, so I think we're safe to talk about it, but it's a Takashi Miike movie. I know you're familiar with some of Takashi Miike's works.
Of course.
We all remember Ichi the Killer with its opening credits being spelt in splattered semen, which I think we all recognize and wish happened in more movies. Like The Hangover Part 2. So, like, it sperms The Hangover. And then, like, another, like, grosser, like, more cotted cream looking sperm ejaculation Part 2. I think we could all agree that would have been a really good way to jumpstart Hangover Part 2.
So it's called
the old sperm credits, essentially. Anyways, 13 Assassins, like, Takashi Miike can make two kinds of movies, either very traditional movies are completely like boundary smashing movies that will get in your zone, your auto zone, and shake you up. Just do some pretty audacious things that normally aren't captured on film. But this is the former. This is him making a very kind of traditional samurai movie. And it's an awesome action movie. And like, he develops the characters. He takes, you know, the first 40 minutes to build these characters. And then it's like a 2-hour movie. The last hour and 15 minutes is all one action sequence. They like, basically these 13 assassins are going to take down this vicious ruler who's not being nice. He's killing
most vicious rulers aren't very nice.
He kills them with the bow and the arrow and the war horse. I think you do see the war horse makes a cameo in this movie in a scene. Watch for when the bridge explodes and then you'll see the war horse falling off
covered in barbed wire,
and he's looking at the camera and he says, "Different day, same shit," and falls. You can't see it at home, but I did a pretty astonishing mimicry of a horse saying words for Rick just now.
You put your hand in front of your mouth to make it look like you had a longer face, like a horse's face.
And then opened and closed it, and then moved a little to the left as I was falling off a bridge. I guess we did explain it pretty adequately to the people at home. But if you like action movies, it's the best of the year. I mean, Attack the Block is maybe my favorite movie of the year, and I guess you could consider it an action movie. But this is just like straight up people fucking other people up, and it's amazing. And the whole sequence at the end is just like a series of emotional, violent payoffs to the beginning of the movie. Speaking of violent payoffs, let's talk about some more sperm credits.
In the ferry.
Okay. I was thinking, like, in the ferry, is that, like, I'm thinking of people, like, on a ferry. I'm like, did I see a movie called In the Ferry? The ferry, and I'm going to butcher their names, but it's a group of French people, a woman and two men, who write and direct films together. They made a movie called L'Iceberg. Oh, the dogs are waking up, so if you start to hear a rumbling from the southwesterly position of your speakers, it'll be a dog fight. Anyways, The Ferry, L'Iceberg and Rumba. And they kind of have this very gentle, almost Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd silent film style to them, where mostly what they're doing is like visual and physical comedy, but not like in a like, oh, I slipped, no, not in the like the modern physical comedy way, which is like, oh, Jim Carrey, rubber face in it. It's a very charming movie. They always dance in all their movies. I think they're a dancing duo. I think they're like classically trained dancers. So they're just very like amiable, funny, gentle movies. And there's always like ass nudity in them because they're French.
What is the thrust of the fairy?
So the actress who writes and directs the films, she plays a fairy in the movie who just kind of shows up in this hotel employee's life and says, "I'm a fairy. I'll grant you 3 wishes." And they kind of fall in love in the middle of these wishes. And it's just a series of complications. And it always just leads to just really strange moments, like a women's rugby team serenading. They have a baby. The woman wishes a baby into her belly and then gives birth soon thereafter. So they have this baby and it's like crying at a bar. So this woman's rugby team sings like this beautiful song. And this like the one of the more masculine of the rugby team members is the one singing it, and like all the other members are like blowing like air, so her hair like flows in the breeze as she sings it. So it's like just all weird little moments like that. Or like he gets injured early in the movie and she's like, "Oh, I can help you with that," and like rolls him over, and then they do this extended sequence where she's like walking on his back and it's only her feet on his back, and it's very clear like she's holding on to a bar above. It's kind of that like, you could almost say it's cheesy, but it's not. It's charming and well thought and played out. Kind of gentle comedy. And there's some silly chase sequences with the baby on the back of a car being driven by a man who can't see very well, who's trying to smuggle some well-meaning gentleman into Britain.
So it's kind of like a touch of Baby's Day Out, too.
It's a lot. There's Joe Montana is in it. There is also a large gorilla in it. So there is a shout out, and then Joe Montana is riding the war horse, And the warhorse is like, twice I get, but three times, give me a break.
But interestingly, it wasn't talking with the hand in front of the mouth that time.
No. No.
So, we've come to a sequence on the sheet of paper that you've handed me.
Is this the end?
Yes, we've got...
Well, let me hit the one movie that I forgot to write
on. Yeah, go ahead and hit it, buddy.
It's the winner of Best Foreign Film at the Oscars this year, and it got nominated for Best Screenplay, A Separation.
Mm-hmm. It's from Iran, correct?
Yes. And you, I would say you shouldn't say Iran so far away from this movie.
Why is that?
If you would sing it with me, we could add another track to our upcoming 2-disc album.
Okay.
It's an amazing movie.
I walk along the avenue. I never thought I'd see a film like you.
Oh, Iran. You are so far away.
All right, so A Separation, what makes it special in your eyes?
It's just gut-wrenchingly dramatic. Like, it's a culture you're not... we don't get to see it. It's kind of demonized in America. They're basically... they're setting it up to be, like, the squeakquel to Iraq. They're like, if you thought Iraq was a shit, look at these fucking guys over here in Iran. But, like, it's people, like, everyday people in Iran. And, like, it's dealing with, like, a woman trying to divorce a man. And, you know, it's hard. Harder than it is in America, obviously, for that to happen there. So, like, you get a glimpse of the legal system, which is kind of just, like, a mess. And you get these people's lives. And, like, it's so complex, like, the emotional, like, minefield that results in these people deciding to separate. Like, and then because they separate, he has to hire a caretaker for his dad, who's very ill, because she moved out. And then they get into something, which leads to more legal issues. But, like, everybody's at fault. Like, there's nobody, like, pure of intention in this movie. So, like, everything is really complicated and all, like, connected to other things. It's just very dramatic. And you can tell, like, whenever the Academy, like, throws that bonus nomination out to a foreign language movie, you can tell they're saying, like, we realize that this is probably better than just Best Foreign Language. Because it got nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Sure.
Which was pretty cool to see. I mean, it didn't get it. So, whatever. But it's basically their way of saying, like, it very well probably should have been nominated for Best Movie of the Year. It's really good. If you like to feel queasy.
Do you like the feeling that Dancer in the Dark gave you?
I wouldn't say it's as depressing as Dancer in the Dark, though. It's not like an endless... like, there is humanity in it, and everyone's kind of trying to work together, but, you know, they keep fucking it up at every turn, so... It's an amazing movie, and all the performances are really good.
So, that brings us to the last slew of films that are on your sheet.
I just listed some of the summer films.
Yeah, and those would be Captain America, Rise of the
Captain Planet... America, colon... The First Avenger. Didn't have enough room to write that on this sheet of paper.
And then Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Fast Five, and Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Colon Dark of the Moon.
So
I'm trying to think of a joke where you like moon somebody and then like the dark of your colon. But it's not really. Pretty much.
You gotta workshop that one. So which of these films do you want to talk about first?
I lumped them all together because I thought that this summer was a pretty... My dog just literally just latched onto my arm, chewing on it like a piece of raw meat. I thought it was a good summer for movies. That might be because these were the four movies I saw during the summer and only one of them fucking sucks, whereas the other three are pretty entertaining. But I thought there's a lot of years where all of the big budget movies are kind of all like, oh, just turd after turd. And I didn't see The Green Lantern. Which is surprising.
Yeah, for you, because Green Lantern is probably your favorite superhero.
You
actually own a Green Lantern.
I own two Green Lanterns,
right? Sorry.
Get it right. But like, I could just
know my inventory.
You could tell going in, you're like, that's not gonna be good. Uh oh. They made a stinky. But, like, usually the movies are kind of all like that lately. They're all kind of Green Lantern-y, like, oh, this could have been good, but it wasn't. But I thought I was pleasantly surprised. Like, Rise of the Planet of the Apes I thought was phenomenal as a bit of summer entertainment. I mean, the Andy Serkis as Caesar was just tremendous. And, like, that movie is so visually good because it's mostly relying on you following the complex emotions of this CGI ape. As it leads a prison revolt inside of, like, this animal sanctuary. And I would, did you see that?
No, I haven't seen any of these films that are on your list.
Oh, okay.
the whole list.
Of all of these, I would recommend that one most highly, I would say. Captain America, I feel, bungles it at the end, but it's from Joe Johnston, who did that.
It's from Atlanta Hawk. Joe Johnston.
Well, who did The Rocketeer, and, like, he brings that vibe, and he was, like, a perfect fit for a period World War II era Captain America kind of pulpy adventure movie. It only fucks it up in that it has to tie it in, like all these movies are tying it in, so they can do the Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Which, as a comic nerd, I get it. That's why we love comics, because all of these storylines intersect in interesting ways, and these characters overlap, and that's what makes comics interesting. But, like, it makes for an unsatisfying, like, there's not a total, like, the movie doesn't feel like a complete whole when you keep, like, saying, but then next time. And then I'm just kind of tired of Samuel L. Jackson showing up in the corner in all of these superhero movies. Thor, I've got a proposition. That was more Morgan Freeman than Samuel L. Jackson. Thor, you and your friends could go to Super Bowl 36. But
10 years ago.
Well, Thor, like, I don't think time is really an issue for a guy who can interdimensionally travel, Rick. You just hop on that motherfucking rainbow bridge.
I know you're a Buccaneers fan.
Thor. You and your friends. Captain America is really entertaining during the time it spends during that World War II era kind of pulpy action with Hugo Weaving is awesome as the Red Skull, the fucking Nazi with a giant red skull. It's a very entertaining movie. And then, what else do I got on there? Fast Five. Really awesome, shockingly. If you've seen the other movies, they're maybe not so good. The second one I find entertaining because they do a Dukes of Hazzard jump onto, like, a ferry boat. Without this freeze frame, unfortunately. Uh-oh. But also, Tyrese and Paul Walker are very... very clearly ex-lovers. Like, I feel like it's purposeful. Like, Tyrese gets really pissed off when there's women around Paul Walker in the movie Too Fast, Too Furious. So there's, like, a very barely concealed gay subtext to that movie, which also makes it fascinating. But, like, Fast Five is a phenomenal action movie. And I don't know if I'll feel the same way when I watch it again. It is pretty long, and all of the scenes that aren't, like, the two or three car chases, which are all really good, and they, like, build and escalate and have, like, amazing scope, and you know what's going on, so they're really good action scenes. All the other scenes are just, like, bros slamming beers and talking about, like, bonds between them. And The Rock is just sweaty as shit. That's, like, The Rock is very dry and charming looking in his kids' movies, and then when he's in action movies, it looks like they just dumped a bucket of water on his head. He just looks like a fucking slab of, like, steak. And then when him and Vin Diesel fight, it just looks like two porterhouse steaks just being, like, slapped against. It's like a Jan Spankmeyer short film. Just two pieces of meat pounding against each other over and over again. Which I clap to emphasize the pounding of the meat there for you at home.
That wasn't Tom actually pounding meat together.
If you're in your D-Box chair right now, you would have felt it shake when I clapped. I do believe Rick's podcasts are D-Box. D-Box, what? I don't even have the word.
I like it.
D-Box accessible. But Fast Five, really good movie.
And
surprisingly good action movie.
The final film,
Transformers,
here, which is clearly the one that you didn't like.
What a hunk of fucking shit that movie was. I liked the first one, and I might be in the minority on that, but I found it entertaining and charming. And then it seemed to embolden Michael Bay in the second one. He's like, I'm going to have more of everything that made the first one. Did you think it was funny in the first one when when there was slightly racist things happening. Well, now it's going to be full on fucking, we're going to have basically blackface Autobots. Like, talking in Ebonics and then revealing that they can't read. They don't know how to read. And then you have the old man robot in the second one who farts. Robot farts. You know, improving on when John Turturro got pissed on by Bumblebee in the first one, which I was amused by, because you have a very good actor in John Turturro being pissed on by a giant robot. The idea of that is funny to me. Maybe less, more so it's the idea that it happened than that it happened in the moment in the movie. The third one is like the second one without anything. Like, without the, like, the second one is like a fever dream. You're like, I can't believe someone paid $200+ million to make this fucking mess of scenes and images. And the third one, like, he scaled that back. So he's trying to tell a story, but it's like a horseshit story. And it's got Patrick fucking Dempsey in it. And Shia LaBeouf. And it's like, you don't care about Shia LaBeouf at this point. In the third movie, it's like, oh, he's having a hard time getting a job. And uh-oh, here comes some more robots. Those two things have to be connected. And then, like, John Malkovich is in it, like, getting tickled by a robot and giggling, and then threatening to fight a robot. So he may have just been drunk the entire time he was on the set of that movie. And then the final action sequence does have some interesting points, like parts. Like, there's that building tipping over, which, if you've seen the trailer, you've seen, like, they're, like, trying to not fall out the side of a tipping building as it's tipping over, and there's some good action in it. But, like, the flimsiest, like, Optimus Prime, the main good guy robot, gets, like, caught in some wires, and he's, like, tangled. He's like, oh, I can't get out. And that incapacitates him for a solid 25 minutes of the final action sequence. These giant fucking robots that transform into vehicles. He's like, oh,
Warhorse, Tintin, what are you doing here?
These wires. Ugh. And it's just a terrible fucking movie. It's just, I wish that we could end it on a better note than it's a really stupid fucking movie. I guess the one thing is, if robots were real, like, if there were, like, actual robot aliens, like, this movie would be rated X, because they get fucking destroyed in this third movie. There's, like, people's spines being ripped out of their backs, decapitations, just, like, crushed heads. It's basically, if you really get off on robots dying, this is gonna just... You're gonna make some sperm credits of your own. Some sperm end credits. Best boy.
So, Tom, as you know, every edition of Host and Guest, we always ask for some recommendations.
Yeah.
To kick it off, let's go with a book recommendation.
Oh, a book recommendation this time.
You work in the book business.
I also clean toilets at that. So let's not...
What's your favorite toilet?
None of the ones at my store, because people shit on and around them, never into them. We did get Upper Deckered at our store recently, which I was pretty impressed by.
You seem happy about it.
I was amused. I didn't have to clean it. And I was amused because nobody knew what an upper decker was, so as they kept telling people that somebody shit in the tank of our toilet, everyone kept saying, oh, you got upper deckered, and everyone was like, how does everyone know what an upper decker is? And it's like, that's in the pop culture now. People just shit in toilet tanks. Anyways, a book recommendation. The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach, I would recommend. It's a book that came out last year. It's for fans of novels and of sports. It follows a young man who's kind of had a rural upbringing, who's brought to this kind of fancier college to kind of try and save their college baseball team. But it's about much more than baseball. And some people on Amazon get mad because there is a gay character or two in it. And they're like, why are these gays in my baseball book? There's no room for gay people in baseball. Which, I think we all know that John Kruk and Carl Ravitch just go at it all the time. It's a good book, is what I'm trying to say.
Then, now that we've discussed a book recommendation, let's move on to a film recommendation.
A film recommendation. Well, we were talking earlier. We got another 3-4 minutes here. I think there's a lot to be said for the early movies of 2012. So can I do it like a multiple film recommendation?
Yeah, then they'd kind of hint at what's to come next time.
I mean, this is just a taste. You don't get the full 15 minutes on each of these movies. But I've really liked Haywire, the Steven Soderbergh film starring Gina Carano, and then a bunch of talented actors who she just fucking destroys with her fists and legs. Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie I thought was a charmer. I think you would agree with that.
It's a weird movie.
We enjoyed it together. I think the standout performer might be John C. Reilly as Tokido. And then we've talked about another one, didn't we?
You said 21 Jump Street.
21 Jump Street is fucking great. It's shocking. Like, you wouldn't, like, just hearing that, oh, they remade 21 Jump Street, you'd be like, oh, god damn it, Hollywood. But it's super good and funny, and it manages to actually take place in the universe of the original 21 Jump Street. And I didn't realize until afterwards from the guys who made Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And that movie's fucking hilarious and good. Like, the only non-Pixar animated movie to come out in a while where you're like, okay, these are talented gentlemen. And they did it again with live action. So
very much like Brad Bird.
Yeah. Like Brad Bird and like John Carter of Mars, maybe, which I haven't seen. I'm sure we'll be talking about that one in a year and 7 months.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for your contributions and your thoughts on film, and thank you for being on Host and Guest.
My pleasure, Rick. Same shit, different year.
Thanks again to Tom Fuchs for joining me on the program, and thank you for having the patience to wait for this episode to go up. I know it took a while, but I have a lot of things going on right now, which is not a bad thing, but sometimes hampers the show. Our theme song is done by Tiny Folk. You can check out his music online. Just search for Tiny Folk, TinyFolk. I'm Rick Hatchke, and this has been another edition of Host and Guest. Fantastic.